don't think it has, I don't think anybody thinks about it a great deal, do you, unless they just connect it. And I think since Johnny Toe left, it's lost its visibility, because partly he was such a stormy petrel that you often heard about it.
Right.
You know, I think I must have saved his neck at least 3 or 4 times. Because, well, Jim Warren has probably told you how infuriated he was over and over and over again by something Johnny had done. He just, you know, Johnny never paid any attention to any of the rules. And he'd go busting ahead, and he didn't care much about the budget either. So Jim probably has told you about their various rows. But several times it would come to the board, the recommendation of the staff, we don't think we can stand Johnny Toll another minute. And I was always the one who would say, we just cannot do this so precipitously. He's one of the best things we've got in the whole university system. And then I always quote him, he's determined to make Stony Brook the Berkeley of the East. And that's the kind of spirit we needed in the State University.
Right.
And he was a fighter.
Yes.
And I just thought he was terrific for us. But you could see he was in the hair of the administration half the time. Oh, they couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of bureaucrats there in Albany that had to do their job, he made it much harder. Even Ernie, you know, with all the patience in the world, finally lost patience with, I remember having to go to Matt with Ernie and just saying, I was giving one more chance.
Well, what were the scraps about?
Well, usually he'd gone busting ahead and gotten a professor at twice the salary that he could afford, or, you know, more than he was authorized to afford. So then he'd get the whole, he'd get everybody upset because the word would get out that so-and-so was being paid more, and they would play hard with the budget. It was mostly that kind of thing, that he'd go ahead and get what he wanted and then let the chips fall where they may.
Well, we're close to New York City, and you can get people who are willing to come to Stony Brook, whereas the same amount of money wouldn't have attracted them to other places in the university system.
That's right. New York was a very important part of that.
New York, and for the scientists, Brookhaven.
Yeah. Brookhaven, of course, was a very important
part. Yeah. Let me try once more.
But bless his heart, Johnny Toll really did set us on the road. You know, you can just dial, don't touch it, dial that redial. See a thing marked redial? Believe it or not. You hear some little click, click, click?
Mrs. Elder there? This is Carl Hartzell. Dorothy, I'm 2 blocks away. And they said, all right, if I were about 15 minutes more over here. But, what's that? No, I'm talking with Mrs. Moore, the former chairman of the Board of Trustees of the State University. But I'll come over just as soon as I can. I see. All right. Fine. Do I have to stay to the bitter end?
So she's anxious for you to get over.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'll
she's
about...
She's getting tired.
Yeah. I don't think I've got much more to tell you. I wish I were more useful to you.
I think you've been useful.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yes. That's right. This is an interview with Mrs. Ward, Mrs. Ward Melville, at her home at 1020 Fifth Avenue in New York City on November 10th, 1987. This is a microtape.
Yeah.
And it works as long as this little light is on.
Well, Ward had the idea of upper education. Because at one time, at You know, there was nothing on Long Island beyond a high school.
Right.
So he had inherited this property from his father. So he just turned that over with a plan to make it a university. Then the architects, I thought, were very mean because they didn't, I think one stipulation was it was to sort of carry the spirit of the old, of the Stony Brook buildings.
Right.
And they paid no attention. They came as if saying, do you like this? Well, they knew he wouldn't like it, you know. And it was so, so mean to a respectable man who was trying to help them. And so finally, I think they built what is the girls' dorm now. I don't know. I haven't been there so long. That's the place when you go in on the right from the Long Avenue there. It goes under the railroad, you know, and comes up. You turn right.
Yes.
And it was a building, next building on the right. It was a girls' dorm for a while now, maybe. I don't know what it is now.
I don't either. I'm not that close to the university now. But initially, it was both men and women in the different wings. It had a number of different wings. I think this was G Quad.
No, I think that was just the women. All the others were dorms for men.
For men, I see.
And then they named a library. They didn't name anybody who was alive. So Ward said, well, I have this land because of my father. So it was named Melville, but never Frank Melville or any Melville. And the next thing, they encased that building, and that was fairly good architecture.
Yes.
Now it's awful, and at least the last time I saw it.
Well, it's the Frank Melville Library. The library was named for Ward's father.
Yes, they had to because they didn't name any building at that time. Then they began to name other buildings, and the only time I think they used the name Melville even was when Javits was there that summer writing his papers.
Yes, right. Well, somehow Ward knew some people in Albany at the State University. I think he must have known Frank Moore.
Well, he may have. I don't remember the connection there.
Yeah.
Because Ward went around. I mean, it was he that had the county revamped somehow. They were going to split Stony Brook or Jefferson into this kind and that kind. And he got named for the three villages because that's what Tip they called the three villages there.
Yes. Well, that's the three. It's the three village school district.
Yeah.
Right.
But before that, the school district was going to say put Setauket in Stony Brook and St. James. You see.
Oh. Uh huh.
And maybe Setauket then or St. Fort Jefferson in whatever the next county would have been, next section.
I see. They were trying to split up Suffolk County. Or was this a school district?
Well, I think it was just kind of a regulation as to how many villages they put in each. I don't know why they did it.
Each school district?
Yeah.
I see.
Ward went to Albany and asked them to take these three towns that were so nearly related down in New York, in Long Island, in one district.
Yeah.
And then he suggested three villages, I guess, because Tip had called the garden club, you know, because that took in the people from the three villages.
Who was Tip?
Mrs. Frank Melville.
Oh, Mrs. Frank Melville, right.
Well, that was
nickname. Your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Yes.
She had a nickname. It was a joke, because they used to go up to stay up in the mountains in Pennsylvania with J.Q.A. Ward, for whom Ward was known, and he's a famous sculptor.
Oh.
And she was boarding over another family. And so one morning the man says, oh, there goes Tickety Witchy. Well, she's into a racehorse and she always walked very fast.
I see.
And so she said, John, don't say that before Mrs. Melville. So he said, when she came down to breakfast, because it was a challenge, he said, how was Mrs. Tickety Witchy? She didn't know why she was Mrs. Tickety Witchy. I mean, she hadn't the knowledge about racing horses.
Well, Ward was named Ward for
J.Q.A. Ward, the sculptor in that oval frame there.
J.Q.A. Ward.
And he's a famous sculptor.
I see.
He did the Indian hunter that's down at the end of the mall here, and he did the pediment or whatever you call this, figures down at the Treasury or the Stock Exchange, I don't know.
I see. Well, was there a Ward Shoe Company?
Well, it was all Melba Shoe Company. Now they diversified it, so they just call it Melba Company.
Melba Company, I see. Right.
It was primarily shoes because McElwain, with whom we bought shoes, it came about through the war because most of our patronage was young men, mm-hmm. and they all went to war. And so he volunteered. It's a long story. I don't know if you want to hear it.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah. When the men went to war, the First World, the Second World War, I guess it's, no, this must have been the, no, it was the Second World War, I think. And you either could carry a gun and shoot somebody or you were put in with food.
Yes.
Well, Ward says, unfortunately, the only reason I can't carry a gun and shoot is that I have the eyesight.
Right.
So he went back to Dr. Poole, who was the Brooklyn man who classified as a fool because he wasn't able to shoot. He went back to Poole and he said, I'd like to do something more than to be a fool. I don't think I am. And so Poole said, well, you go to Washington and get yourself a commission and I'll change you to whatever that commission was. So he went to Washington. There was a Mr. There was a big factory in the South run by Mr. Shepherd. I don't know anyone there. And he was a senior to Ward. So Ward said, I'm down here, Mr. Shepherd. Can't you give me a job or something? Or can't I be helpful to you?
So I think this was after, this was before or during World War I. Because World War I started in 1914, and Ward graduated from college in 1909.
No, we were married in 19, 18.
18.
1918.
Uh-huh.
And this was
this was after you were married then.
Oh, yes.
I see, all right.
Because he came up and visited me, and he said, I'm in such a small room, I don't know how I get out, but the only way I get back in is to go in through the transom or something. So it's story like that. And so, what is that meeting up to? Well, that's the part he took. He got a commission, a second lieutenant, and he went down and helped this Mr. Shepherd. Mm-hmm. And all our patronage, you see, were going to war. Mm-hmm. Now they call it favoritism, I suppose. So we started making shoes for the Army.
For the Army, right.
And because Mr. Shepherd knew our reputation, and maybe Shepherd was having shoes made, I don't know, that part of it. Mm-hmm. And now what was that supposed to lead up to?
Well, you were making shoes for the Army, and I was asking you about the Ward Shoe Company, and you said that was all under Melville Shoe.
John Ward, that branch of the company was named for Ward. He was called John Ward.
I see.
And on their stone in Caroline Church, they are the parents of John Ward, and on my stone and his, it just says Ward, because he thought a name ahead of, or initial ahead of the name was weakening. So he just dropped the John.
He dropped, I see.
So here lie Ward Melville
Ward.
And Dorothy B.
Well.
Now what else?
Well, let's see. When I came in 62, Judd Sullivan was already chairman of the council. Ward had been the first chairman of the council.
What council?
The university council.
Well, it was that kind of side issue. It had nothing to do. They used to try to raise money or earn money to help Satan.
That's not the foundation. The council, the council was a legislative body.
In Albany?
No, not in Albany. Each one of the institutions throughout the state had its own advisory council, William J. Sullivan succeeded Ward as the chairman of the Stony Brook Council, the council
for the Freeman Arts.
No, not the University Council.
Oh, well, that gets out beyond me. I don't think I knew that. All I know, there was this group that gave money or got money or did things, and it was Mr.
That's the foundation. That's the Stony Brook Foundation. Ward and I and George Collins were the three incorporators of that, the foundation.
I didn't see it. I was there, and I probably heard it in conversation from Ward that night. It's out the other ear and up here too.
Right. Well, tell me some more about Ward, what you remember about him.
About him?
About him as a person.
Well, of course, I thought he was pretty good. And I've given advice to so many young couples that they do, because they're just silly people today, that if you can't discuss things with your husband, where there's a misunderstanding, or if you do, you'll find that sometimes I was wrong and sometimes he was wrong, and we straightened it out and that was okay. Over.
So you could talk. You could talk easily with him. You and he could talk together.
Yes, we talked about having our children and everything, and I know one night he was at a meeting and somebody asked me to go up to the music hall in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So I put signs around. I've gone out. I thought he'd be home before me, and I wanted to know him to know where I was, not to lock me out. So much to my amazement, I was home from the concert before he got home. And I learned to type Braille, you know.
Oh, good.
I did a couple of Kipling stories, because he was the one, he could recite Kipling from here to Boston.
Hmm.
The sonnets, you know.
Yeah. If, Kipling's If.
Yeah, well, not the whole book. Well, I guess maybe I did a couple books. I forget which books I did.
Jungle Stories or Just So Stories?
Well, I know that when he was ill and dying, I went to a bookstore on 86th Street and 3rd Avenue, and I asked for Kipling. You'd think I was asking for a diamond mine. They never heard of him. So finally I found one copy that had just the sonnets, you know.
I see.
If we're 40 this and 40 that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
He had pretty definite ideas about education.
Well, he was a Columbia graduate, and he wasn't so much of a student. Wellington Koo was always a debating team against him, but he took up, and I think at one time he went to a professor and studied some Chinese just to fill in space to get the points.
I see.
That isn't accurate, probably. I don't remember now who it was. And my uncle, who took me to China, that isn't what you want to know, was Professor Constitutional Law Professor at Columbia. So when China was asking for legal advisement, he was taken over. And then...
Was that good enough? Good no?
Good no.
Good no.
He was
yes.
My uncle.
Is that right?
He was my mother's sister.
Brother?
No, his wife was mother's sister.
I see. Uh-huh.
I'm a fracking out, Lizzie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was then, while he was in China, Johns Hopkins invited him to be president.
Mm-hmm.
So China had been so fair in releasing him under Willoughby. I mean, he put in a substitute in China, Professor Willoughby. So he decided, as long as China had been so decent to let him go to Hopkins during the winter, and he really didn't have his teeth in it yet, he'd go back to China and finish out as nearly as he could his term. And it was then that his daughter and I, cousin on one side of the family, and then a cousin on the Goodenough side, mm-hmm. we all went to China. And Uncle Frank had been there before.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Well, I had a great uncle who left Harvard after he graduated in 1866 and spent all his life in China.
Daddy graduated in 1873 from New Haven, mm-hmm. and I have a clock here that says it was given to Father in 1873.
Is that right?
Or about that time it was given to him. It's one of these Tiffany coach.
Oh?
You can see one there that isn't running just now.
Yes, I can see it. One, a carriage clock.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I have a leather case that one of them belongs in. You had a little window. You could carry it in the case. And you have a little window you pull up and slot in the back to put the window on. It's not in service.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I'd love to be more helpful to you, but...
Well, we'll just take a little time and think here. Ward's...
If you had a few questions written down, I could think about them and maybe send you some kind of an answer, but...
I can...
I'd rather do it this way.
Okay.
We can do it to your satisfaction and finish it.
Did you know any of the people in the central office, such as, I mentioned Sam Gould, did you know, besides Frank Moore, did you know Ernest Boyer? He was chancellor after Sam Gould.
You see, I don't know chancellor. I remember going to Huntington, and there was somebody there, a colored man. He was a something at the university.
Well, that was Wharton.
Yes.
Yes.
And I went to Huntington.
Well, he was chancellor also. He's the most recent chancellor, actually.
Well, I thought he was a fine fellow, and I admired him tremendously, because in those days there was such horrible prejudice against colored people. And some of the people were positively rude in the audience when he was speaking. You know, they wouldn't be quiet. They'd been drinking or something.
Hmm. When was this, do you remember?
Well, whenever he was in Huntington.
I see. Right. Yes, I think...
I rented a car and drove out and got there a little ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember... let's stay with Wharton for a minute. He has now gone to head up the insurance organization for all the teachers in the country, all the professors in the country,
really?
TIAA and CREF,
mm-hmm.
which is a very, very important position.
Yes, I think so.
Right.
The top of anything today in the world is such a heavy population and such a diverseness in thought.
Right, right.
Like people just like to strike, and I don't know how teachers strike and leave poor children without their days of schooling.
Mm. They don't seem to consider that.
Well, they used to. You used to have to attend school in any year so many days, I don't remember. And the teachers wouldn't just be there. Not even substitute, I suppose, because they'd be crossing the line or something, expression, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's see. I think we, Ward gave, initially, I think it was 480 acres.
Wow, yes.
And then we bought the land on the east side of Nickel Road where the Health Sciences Center,
yes,
we bought that.
Yes,
we bought that land from him.
And from whom?
From Ward.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yes, he owned that land, and when the university was started, he wanted churches along that street, and he gave so many acres to each church.
That's right.
Yeah.
Farther down Nickel Road, it's south of the hospital.
Yes, it's past the road that comes out of the university parking lot there.
Right, yes.
And a big rock.
Yeah, that's right.
You see, it isn't so awfully long since I've been there, but not seeing it going way back. In many ways, it's much easier to remember the past than it is the present.
Why did he give land to the churches? Do you
know? He fell with university there. Each one should maybe get to church. He wasn't an over-religious man, but he felt if anyone had a feeling that they wanted to go to church, we always went to Carolina,
sure.
Sang in the choir, and up in Norfolk, up off the organ.
Is that right? Up in Norfolk?
Yeah,
no, Connecticut.
That was Mommy and Daddy's home.
That's the Bigelow's home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've always sung in the choir, and my youngest boy had a very nice voice, soprano voice.
Oh, really?
And he'd say, Mommy, why is it just before I get singing, my throat gets kind of dry? Well, I didn't tell him why, but I knew why.
Yeah.
And Ruth has a pretty nice little voice. It isn't very big. I think maybe I have a bigger voice if I just kept, when I'm lying in bed and listening to my music box, as I call it, I can still squeeze fairly high.
Good, good.
Because I always enjoyed singing. The family, I think, wasted money on piano. I don't have a very good hand. I'm very spatulate, you see, very wide and short fingers.
Well,
that was in our home in West 72nd Street.
Is that where you grew up?
Yes, I went to a French school, Mademoiselle Valtin School on 74th. Just
Mademoiselle
Valtin.
Valtin.
Valtin. She was a French woman, and she had a Bryn Mawr graduate watching the Scholastic and the, I forget what her name was now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't mean you. And then, of course, when the trains were electrified and Park Avenue became a place of swank, why, everybody moved over into that district.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But before that, it was just the smoke outlet from the train.
I see.
And of course, on Manhattan, but this is going into Manhattan history then. Well, I've seen a good many changes right here in New York from my little girlhood days, where I lived and where I was born. And the travel on Manhattan Island used to be by boat up and down, and most of the streets went across town. Then when they shut up Park Avenue and began to travel overland, it was carriages. They put in Lexington has no number, and Madison, I think, has no number.
Mm-hmm.
This is Fifth Avenue,
mm-hmm.
and then Park is Fourth.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There is no Fourth.
Well, that's it, I guess.
There is no Fourth, and it's Park, and then you have Lexington.
Lexington.
And then you have Third.
Third, Second, but beyond
First.
That, it's in when they made Park Avenue, I think they gave it a funky name. It wasn't Park, it was just Chimney.
Just, I see. Well, a lot has gone on since you and I were there. Of course, I was born in Chicago in 1906.
Chicago, we used to call it.
Chicago?
It's children.
Uh-huh.
Well, I still listen to my music box with concerts on Sunday from Chicago in the winter.
Oh.
And in the summer, they visit around.
Mm-hmm.
They're very fine musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were born in Chicago, what from then on?
I stayed there 5 years, and father became ill, I think from bovine tuberculosis, mm-hmm. from unpasteurized milk.
Oh,
and,
really?
And they told him to go out to Pasadena, California. So we went out there, and I started school in Pasadena. And he died in 1916 on his 40th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Mother came from Newton, Massachusetts.
Newton, Mass. I used to visit up Newton because I had not a classmate, but a very close friend at Bennett where I went to school,
mm-hmm.
after I lived around the Belt, and she was a Lucas, and I think she was expecting herself an offspring. So Morley, his name was David Morley Lodge,
mm-hmm.
and he was called Morley, and now is David Lodge, all those successions.
I see. Well, so I went to Newton High School and Wesleyan, and then Harvard.
It's funny, you went to Wesleyan,
yeah.
And Anne went to, well...
Wheaton. Anne went to Wheaton.
Wheaton.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And it's just gone coeducational.
Mm. Well, I think they have to.
I think they have to.
They have to go in somewhere. The colleges all seem too small.
Well, the pool of those girls who prefer women's colleges is shrinking.
I suppose so. They like to be with boys.
Yes. Right.
Nice distraction.
Are you getting tired?
Well, I am tired, but if I can finish you, I don't want you to have to come back or anything.
You don't want to see me again, huh?
Well, I will if you have a list of questions, or you can send them in to me, and I get somebody to type you over an answer.
Who, at the university, did you know, you and Ward, know best?
I got interested in Schubel because...
Jerry Schubel.
Jerry Schubel.
Yes.
Because I have a niece who married a, interested in marine.
Marine biologist?
Marine biologist.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at John Marburger's for dinner.